I just want to share a few things this evening. Any chance of having just a little bit more light out there? That's lovely. Thank you. Just so that I can see the enemy. I became a Christian 2 months before my 16th birthday. And I was keen. And from the beginning, I really wanted to go for it with Jesus. I really wanted to serve Jesus. And I remember soon after I became a Christian, I bought a book by a famous Christian leader about his life, a Christian autobiography. And as I read it, there was like a miracle on every page. And it was like, you know, I walked down the street and I said hello to someone and they gave their life to Jesus. I blinked at someone else and they fell down and stuff like that. And I was really encouraged reading the story. And then I bought another book by a famous Christian leader about their life. And there was a miracle on every page there. And after my third or fourth book, instead of being encouraged, I started to get discouraged. Because if I was honest, my life wasn't even a miracle on every page, let alone in every chapter, let alone a miracle on every page. And I was starting to think, gosh, I'm not a really good Christian. I've still got struggles. I've still got things that I'm not good at. When I pray, I fall asleep. When I read my Bible, I read down a whole page and then I can't remember anything that I just read. Anyone else know that one? Oh, good. Well, you're sinners. And, I'd get to pray. And before I started praying, I'd be full of energy. And as soon as I started praying, this deep, deep sleep would come over me. And I'd start thinking about all the important things that I needed to do, tidy my room, load the dishwasher, stuff that would never occur to me any other time. And I just felt a failure as a Christian. And then one of the books I read was by this famous Christian leader, and I heard that he was doing a conference in Bognor Regis. Now, yeah. Bognor Regis may be nice to go in summer. I don't know. I've never been in summer. But this conference was in February. And I booked in to go. And I don't know, I was about 18 at the time, something like that. And I arrived in Bognor Regis on the day the conference started. And I booked in at my bed and breakfast. Left my stuff at the room. For those of you that from other nations, a bed and breakfast is like a cheap hotel run by a family in their house. And I put my stuff there and then I went along to the first evening meeting. And there were about 1,500 people there. And the worship was a bit like we have here. It was exuberant. And everyone was celebrating and dancing and I was celebrating with them. And after a while, we all sat down, and then the famous Christian leader came onto the platform, and he stood on the stage, and he looked at us. And then he said, "Brothers and sisters, are you living in the victory tonight? Have you triumphed over sin, sickness, and Satan? Or have sin, sickness, and Satan triumphed over you?" Immediately, I felt guilty. And then he said, "I stand before you tonight with all the symptoms of the flu. My throat is sore, my head aches, my nose is running. But," he said, "but I am not believing in the flu. I am believing in the God who has triumphed over the flu." And then he said, "And tonight, brothers and sisters, I'm standing on my healing." And I remember thinking, I wonder how you do that. Well, when he said that, we just, 1,500 of us, we clapped and cheered him. And then he preached, and then the meeting was over. And I started walking back to my bed and breakfast. And as I was walking back, I passed a fish and chip shop. Now, I just want to tell you something here, because some of you, you don't know me very well. And I just need to tell you that I am a man of principle. I'm not like some of you, wishy-washy, blown around by the latest fad or anything. All my life, there are certain principles by which I live my life. And one of the principles on which I live my life is this. I never, ever, ever go past a fish and chip shop without going in. And so I went in. And I bought a portion of fish, chips and mushy peas. For our foreign friends, mushy peas is very English. It's wonderful. And we put salt and vinegar on the fish and chips and mushy peas and wrapped it in paper. And I went out and I sat on a bench and I unwrapped it and I began to eat my fish and chips and mushy peas. Now, for those of you that are from abroad, you don't maybe understand this English-British custom. You know there's fish and chips, guys. You know there's that kind of fish and chips where the fish is the batter is crisp, golden, delicious, and you break it, and on the outside it just cracks, and on the inside there's the white, succulent flesh, and it's just that amazing duality of textures. And where the chips, they're not like those McDonald's string beans. These are proper chunky chips. They're what I would want to call Pilavachi chips. They're chips with body and with the right texture of salt and vinegar. I want to tell you, these were not that kind of fish and chips. These were the kind of fish and chips that when I broke a big piece of the fish off, the grease ran down my elbow. The chips were more like brown mash than chips. And if I'm honest, the mushy peas tasted like they'd gone past their sell-by date. But I thought, I've bought them, so I'm going to eat them. That is another principle on which I live my life. I finished them, and I went back to my bed and breakfast. I went to my room. I got undressed. I went to bed. I fell asleep. At about 2 a.m, I began to awaken. And I was for a while in that half asleep, half awake sense where I remember I started thinking, what is this sensation I'm aware of? And then as I awoke more and more, I realized what it was. It was that feeling you get when you know you're going to vomit. And I thought, oh no, I'm in a bed and breakfast in Bognor Regis. I don't want to vomit. And then I remembered what the famous Christian leader said. And I said, I'm not believing in the vomit. I am believing in the God who has triumphed over the vomit. And I got out of bed and I stood on my healing. But it didn't seem to work. It felt worse and worse and worse. And then I started walking around the room, half to calm my stomach and half speaking happy thoughts to myself. And more, I was just feeling dreadful. And you know when you're going to vomit, you know there's that, you get that 5-second warning. It's on its way up and it's not going down again. Well, I got that 5-second warning. I rushed out of my bedroom. I rushed across the landing. I crashed into the bathroom. I opened the toilet seat. I knelt in front of the toilet and out it gushed. And it was in a torrent. It was like a mighty Niagara. It was coming out so fast. Fish, chips, mushy peas, and carrot. And I thought, where the hell has the carrot come from? I haven't eaten carrot for weeks. Have you noticed that whenever you vomit, there's always carrot in there somehow? I think there's a little compartment in the stomach that is, let's save a little bit of carrot to add colour to vomit, just in case compartment. Well, it came out, I tell you, it came out so fast that my nose acted as an overflow pipe. And I got a bit of mushy pea stuck in my left nostril. It was horrible. It was horrible. And it just came out and eventually it stopped. And I thought, oh, it was awful, but it's over. It's over. So I got some toilet paper. I wiped my mouth. I wiped round the toilet seat on the floor. And then I went back to bed And I thought, that was dreadful, but it's over. I lay in bed. 15 minutes later, I thought, no. I got up. I thought happy thoughts. The 5-second warning. I rushed to the toilet just in time. And out more came. More came out than I ever remember putting in. Have you noticed it expands in your stomach? And it just came out, and eventually it was over. And I was getting exhausted by this time. And you know, I don't know about you, but however old you get, you know, everyone, when they're vomiting in someone else's house, they want their mum. And I was like, where's my mum? I just want my mum, but she wasn't there. So I went back to bed, another 15 minutes, and it was like, oh, come off it. Have you noticed it always comes in threes? Well, it does with me. And the third time's always the worst, because by the third time, there's actually nothing left. Your stomach is empty, but your stomach and your brain have met each other, and they're having a really nice party together. And it's like, I just knew it was coming. And I thought, how can there be more? And you know, I went to the bathroom and I knelt in front of the bathroom. And the third time, it's the most painful because there's nothing there. And I just knelt there and I was going like this. And eventually, after ages, this bile burned my throat and just a bit came out. Well, then I rinsed with Listerine. I went back to bed and I fell asleep. A few minutes later, it felt like at 7 a.m., my alarm clock went. I thought, oh no, I just want to die. I just want to die. I couldn't triumph over a bit of vomit. I don't want to go to a Christian meeting. I'm not a Christian. I don't think I ever was. I think salvation's for everyone except me. And then I thought, no, come on, I better get dressed. So I got dressed. I had a shower. Well, I had a shower and then I got dressed. And then I went downstairs to the breakfast room and I sat there feeling terrible. The landlady came up to me and she said, good morning, sir. Would you like a full English breakfast? Fried egg, sausage, bacon, baked beans, tomato, fried bread. Dear brothers and sisters, I wish I could stand before you this evening and tell you I said no. But that is another principle by which I live my life. And I really didn't want to go to this meeting, but I thought, I've paid for this conference, so I may as well go. And I walked there, and at the entrance, there was one of these happy stewards. You know, you meet at Christian conferences with the yellow or orange jackets. And he was standing at the entrance, smiling. And I thought, please, just go in. So I put my head down, and I tried to walk past him. And then I felt his hand on my shoulder. I turned round, I looked up at him, and he said, brother, are you living in the victory this morning? Have you triumphed over sin, sickness, and Satan? And you know, I didn't know what to do. Everything in me wanted to say, actually, I'm not triumphing. I've been puking all flipping night. But I could tell by the glint in his eyes that if I told him that, he would try and lay hands on me. And the way I was feeling is if he tried to lay hands on me, I was sure I was going to lay hands on him back. So I just looked at him and smiled weakly and said, yes, thank you very much. I walked in and then I felt a total failure. Not only could I not triumph over a bit of vomit, but I couldn't even tell the truth about it. I was a liar as well as a failed Christian. And then I went to the meeting and the worship happened. And whereas I enjoyed it the night before, you know, when you're not in that place and everyone's going crazy, you start judging them. Am I the only one? Oh, look at you prancing around you. You've, you're just showing off. You're just showing off for the look at you. Look at you. You don't mean that. And I just stood there judging them. And then, is there something dripping on you? What? The vents are doing what now? Okay, nothing's dripping on you. Oh, they've closed again, have they? They're open. I thought you wanted them open. Okay. Do you know, I don't know if this is really happening or if it's just a terrible nightmare I'm having. didn't happen to the Apostle Paul. Anyway, I'm glad you're happy. At least I think you're happy. And what was I talking about? Oh, yeah. And then, at the end of the worship, this famous Christian leader came onto the stage. And he stood and he looked at us. And he said, brothers and sisters, are you living in the victory this morning? Have you triumphed over sin, sickness, and Satan? I wonder why I always look at you when I say Satan. Or has sin, sickness, and Satan triumphed over you? And then he said, last night I stood before you with all the symptoms of the flu, but I did not believe in the flu. I believed in the God who triumphed over the flu. And this morning I stand before you and I declare all the symptoms are gone. I am healed. And when he said that, 1,499 people stood and clapped and cheered that famous Christian leader. And I wanted to kill him. I left that conference feeling worse than when I started. Because I suddenly thought, you know what? It's true. I'm hopeless. I'm a failure. I can't get it right. I struggle with life. I struggle with doubts. I struggle with myself. I struggle with other people. And then, after quite a while, I read Paul's two letters to the church in Corinth that can be found in the New Testament, 1 and 2 Corinthians. And you know, up until that time, you know, I'd thought of Paul as the hard man of the Christian church. You know, I don't know about you, but I've always imagined when I get to heaven, there's some people I can't wait to meet. The Apostle John is one of them, you know, who called himself the beloved disciple. Because, you know, he wrote in his letter, beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, for he who loves knows God, for God is love. And he's just seems such a nice guy. And I imagined him saying, Mike, come in, come to my house, come and have some tea. You know he loves you as well. You know you're the beloved disciple as well. There you are, and all of that stuff. And if there's one person I've always wanted to avoid, it's the Apostle Paul. Because I just imagined that he'd look at me and he'd say, how many churches have you planted? Is that all? And I just felt that he would condemn me. But then I read these two letters and I was amazed at what I saw. And all I'm going to do, and then we're going to pray, well, I'm going to do a bit more than that, is just read you a few extracts from the letters that Paul was the great leader of the early church. Do you know about half of the New Testament was either written by him or his followers? And listen to what he says. I love this. In 1 Corinthians 1, beginning at verse 26, he says to the church in Corinth, brothers and sisters, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. And you know, when I read that, I thought, maybe there's hope. God chose the foolish things of this world to shame the wise. Foolish things like me. God chose the weak things of this world, like Crofty, to shame the strong. God chose us in our weakness and our foolishness. Listen to what he says in chapter 2, verse 2. For I resolved to know nothing while I was with you, except Jesus Christ and him crucified. I came to you in weakness, with great fear and trembling. Do you hear what he says? He says, I came to you in weakness, with great fear and trembling. I came to you in weakness, with great fear and trembling. This is the secret of the Christian life. Now, I'm just going to turn to the second letter of the Corinthians. In chapter 4, beginning at verse 7, Paul says this, but we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. Do you know what he's saying there? Do you know what he's quoting? In those days, they didn't have banks. They didn't have safety deposit boxes. So the rich people would hide their treasure where they thought the thieves, the burglars, wouldn't be able to take it. And what they did for a while is they hid their treasure in expensive vases. And of course, what happened was the burglars came in. The first thing they saw was the expensive vases. They stole the vases with the treasure inside. And they got the vases and the treasure. And then after a while, the clever rich people, because it's the clever rich people that stay rich, they thought this isn't working. So do you know what they did? They went out and bought jars of clay. They bought cracked pots. They bought the sort of thing that I used to make in pottery class when I was 8. They bought rubbish. They bought rubbish. And what they did is they hid their treasure in the jars of clay. They hid their treasure in the cracked pots. And then when the burglars came, they said to themselves, we're not going to bother with that. We'll take the expensive stuff. And they missed the treasure. And Paul uses that picture to say, God puts his treasure in cracked pots. He puts his treasure in jars of clay to show that the all-surpassing worth is from him and not from us. Guys, we are just jars of clay, but he hides his treasure in us. And do you know what? This is the glory of the Christian gospel. The treasure shines through the cracks. His life, his glory shines through our brokenness. That's how it works. I used to think that if God was going to use you, I used to think that if you were going to be someone that was going to live a powerful life for God, you had to have everything sorted. I used to think that people who stood on platforms and preached were sorted and had everything working right. I thought that until I started standing on platforms. Because you see, I get to live with me and I know what I'm like. Listen to this. We're just going to go on a little bit. He says this straight after in verse 8 of chapter 4. We are hard pressed on every side, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Do you know, I love that because I spend most of my life perplexed, but not quite in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed. And then we go on to 2 Corinthians chapter 6, beginning at verse 3. He says this, in verse 4, I'll start. Rather, as servants of God, we commend ourselves in every way. How did he commend himself? In great endurance, in troubles, hardships, and distresses, in beatings, imprisonments, and riots, in hard work, sleepless nights, and hunger. And then he says some nice things as well and mixed things. Then let's turn over. We read here in 2 Corinthians 11, and I'm going to start at verse 21. 2 Corinthians 11, Paul says this. Now, the Corinthians have been boasting about different apostles, different Christian leaders who visited them, and how they were the super apostles, the super Christian leaders, and how they followed this one or they followed that one. And Paul was saying, this is nonsense. And then he goes a little bit crazy. Listen to what he says. because they were boasting. He says, whatever anyone else dares to boast about, I'm speaking as a fool, I also dare to boast about. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they Abraham's descendants? So am I. Are they servants of Christ? I'm out of my mind to talk like this. I am more. And then he gives his CV. Listen to this. I have worked much harder, been in prison more frequently. Now, can you imagine if you, applying for a job as a church pastor, minister, and putting on your CV? You know, I've been in prison more frequently than anyone else. I'm not sure it would get you the job. More frequently. I've been flogged more severely and exposed to death again and again. 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. Do you know, if you've received the 40 lashes 5 times, who cares about the minus one? 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 time I was pelted with stones. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I mean, how does a person manage to get shipwrecked 3 times, for goodness sakes? You'd have thought after the first 2 times, he'd have taken the bus. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. I have been constantly on the move. Listen to this. I have been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my fellow Jews, in danger from the Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at sea, and in danger from false believers. I think the message he was trying to get across there was he was in a little bit of danger. I have labored and toiled and have often gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst and have often gone with, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness, this man suffered, guys. This man really suffered. I have known hunger and thirst and have often gone without food. I have been cold and naked. Besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all the churches. Who is weak and I do not feel weak? Who is led into sin and I do not inwardly burn? And then he says this, if I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. And then the final one, this is the killer one. In chapter 12, I'm going to begin at verse 7. You know, he says about how he got these revelations, these visions of heaven. And then he says, I'm actually going to go to verse 6. Even if I should choose to boast, I would not be a fool because I would be speaking the truth. But I refrain so no one will think more of me than is warranted by what I do or say, or because of these surpassingly great revelations. Therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. 3 times, says Paul, I asked him to take this thorn in my flesh away from me. I don't know. I wonder if it was 3 times he said, Lord, Lord, I don't want to vomit. And 3 times the Lord didn't take that away. I like to think it might have been. But he says this. But he said to me, my grace is enough for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. He actually says, I delight in these things. I delight in weaknesses. I delight in brokenness. Why? Because it's in our weakness that we lean on him. His power is not made perfect in our strength. His power is made perfect in our weakness. And the reason I'm teaching this, the reason I'm saying this tonight, is that I know that there are a whole bunch of you, there are a whole bunch of you who have written yourself off from God using you in any significant way because of your weakness, because of your addiction, because of your repeated failure, because of your struggle to pray, because of your struggle to get to grips with the Bible, because your struggle to love people who have really hurt you, because of your anxiety and panic attacks or whatever it is. And I want to say to you, it's in the place of your weakness that God can use you. Yes, he wants to heal you. Yes, he wants to set you free. But don't wait until you're sorted before letting him use you. He wants to use you now, and he'll heal you on the way. I've been following Jesus for 43 years. And if I waited until I was sorted, I'd wait until I was in heaven. Andy told us, for those of you that were here last year, about how he had a year of anxiety attacks and panic attacks and all of that, and how hard it was. And I've had a year, to be honest, where my physical health has been pretty bad. And there's other things that go on. There's other areas of brokenness. But you know what? We just decide it was never about us. It's about him. It's about saying, Lord, I may not be very much, but I give you all that I have. I give you all that I am. Would you use me? And do you know what I've noticed? It's in our weakness. I said to you earlier on about asking God to speak to me in meetings. Do you have any idea how terrifying that is sometimes? Do you have any idea? And do you know, I never feel strong. It's just one way. I always feel like, is this you, Lord, or is this me? I don't know. And I'll just tell you one story, and then we're going to pray. And I'd love to tell you the story that's kind of makes it sound really like I knew all the time. But I'm going to tell it to you as the truth. There were a couple of years ago, I don't know if it's two or three, a couple of years ago, at our Momentum Festival for those in their 20s, and it was in the ministry at the end of, during the worship, this thought came into my head. There's someone here who's having an affair with a pastor in their church. And as soon as I got that, I was like, no way. I am not going there. I am not saying that. No way am I saying that. And then I said to the Lord, Lord, I'm not saying that. That's a negative word. It goes against our values. Can you imagine? I told the Lord it goes against our values. And then I said to the Lord, and anyway, how am I supposed to say that? Excuse me, but there's someone here, you're having an affair with a pastor in your church. Would you like to come forward now? You know, it's like, how am I supposed to do that? And so I said to the Lord, I won't do that. And do you know, he then said to me, Mike, it's not my judgment, it's my mercy. And for a moment, he opened a window on my heart, and I just wanted to cry. Felt like dying. I just felt his compassion for this person, and I just knew I had to. And so I said, forgive me if this is wrong, but I think there might be someone here. You're having an affair with a pastor in your church, and it's his mercy, it's his compassion, it's not his judgment. If that's you, at any time during this meeting, my friend Ali will be at the side of the stage. Come and tell her it's you. We'd love to pray for you. Or maybe come and tell her at the end. Or if you can't, please go to the chat room and tell someone. Would you know? I was sure it was nonsense. Well, I wasn't sure, but I thought it might well be. And at the end of the meeting, a young lady went up to Ali, and she was crying, and she said, that's me. She said, I'm having an affair with the youth pastor in our church. I'm 19, and he's married with three kids, and I hate myself, and I feel so ashamed. and I can't tell anyone. And I told him I want to stop, but he says, we can't stop. It's the right thing to continue. And she said, you know, I haven't been able to tell anyone. I can't believe they said that. And then she said something that killed me when it was reported to me. She said, I nearly didn't come to this camp because I feel so full of shame and guilt. And she said, as I was driving here, I said to God, God, I'm too ashamed to tell anyone about this. If you really want me out of this relationship, you're going to have to tell someone on the stage about me. She actually said that. And so she knew. And then friends of ours prayed with her for the next 3 days. And she was out of that relationship. And she started getting healed and restored. And her life turned around. Now, I'd love to tell the story like, oh, I knew and it was due. But you know what? It was in weakness. It was in brokenness. And that's how God uses us, because we have to lean on him. And God wants to do miracles through you. He wants to do miracles in the coming years through you. And the tragedy is, most of you do not believe it's possible. You don't have to be super spiritual. You don't have to be super holy. You just have to be open to him and say, Lord, I'm getting up again. Can we go another round? Can we go another round? And he wants to meet with you. I'll stop there.